Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest is Rodney Shakespeare. Rodney is, let me just put it this way. It's great to have Rodney back on. It's been so long, Rodney, since I had you last on, but I must say the same is true for so many of my other dear friends to discuss the major world and national issues that are so important with wonderful people like yourself who understand them so well and can explain them truthfully, explain them in detail, explain them in context. This is the kind of information that people need to know. Why this program and others like it are so important, Rodney. Welcome. There is so much going on. I always like to have my guests jump in and talk about the things that concern them most, but we have a whole hour, and we certainly can cover an awful lot of ground.
Okay, well, Steve, first of all, welcome to you coming back on the show, and that's great. And I would like to just start dealing with the effect of the alternative media. For example, of the Progressive Radio Network, Press TV, Russia Today, Facebook and Twitter. Because I'm going to be asking you in a minute, but certainly your listeners may not always understand how together we are having a great effect, though sometimes it's not easy to see the immediate direct effect. I want to just illustrate that with a little story of Paul Craig Roberts. Paul Craig Roberts is a giant of a man, one of the great analysts of the USA. And a while ago, he wrote to people on one of his lists saying that he felt that he was having no impact and that there was no response, and therefore he was thinking of giving up the immense amount of work that he does doing the analysis and articles which come from him all the time. And I immediately wrote a screeching email at him. You can imagine my tone, Steve. And I said, in capital letters, do you realize that, first of all, the people that you want to influence are also people who would recognize that they would not want to bother you with unwanted emails. Secondly, that the people that you want to influence are in fact people who don't have time to send unwanted emails. And thirdly, the way these things work is very, very indirect. Now, I'd like to believe, Steve, that my screech led to Paul Craig Roberts continuing his remarkable work. But I think perhaps he's number one. But I'd like to ask you as a starter today, and now you are, I say to people that you're my number one analyst, right, whom I know. I don't personally know Paul Craig Roberts. But I'd like to ask you, do you sometimes feel that you don't get feedback, and yet at the same time, there's undoubtedly that you have a huge influence, and that the influence of the alternative media is indeed growing? So let's ask you personally, do you sometimes feel like that?
Well, I'll give you an honest answer, Rodney. During my illness that lasted 2 months, aside from the fact that I wanted to come back and recover my full health and vigor, as I like to put it, what bothered me most was the fact that I couldn't write daily articles, I couldn't do media work, this program, lots of interviews that I get. It just grated at me that I couldn't do this. And the thing that mattered so much to me outside of being able to walk through my front door and have my humble abode never look so good as it did a week ago yesterday was the fact that I could begin writing articles again, and I knew exactly the first article that I would write. I called it Back from the Abyss, and indeed it was Back from the Abyss, but I included more than that. It was a brief explanation of why I was absent for so long and people didn't know what happened to me. I felt I owed my readers and listeners and so on an explanation, but then I briefly discussed some of the things I would have written about had I been able to, but I couldn't. I look forward every day, Rodney, to getting up and writing more about the big issues of the day, and I simply can't imagine spending a day doing anything else but that.
Yes, that's right. But the point of Paul Craig Roberts, when he wrote this to his list, was that he felt that he wasn't getting the response back. And here is a man of great influence and analysis. We all read his stuff, and it imbues our thoughts and imbues our actions, and is now having a huge impact in the world. But he said to his list that he didn't feel that because people weren't sort of coming back to him with response. Now, to which I said, well, A, you couldn't read all the sponsors if they did, and B, the people who are affected know that and have time to make response. So he wasn't realizing the impact of his work. Now, I'd like to ask the same question to you. Do you sometimes feel that you don't get direct responses from those that you seek to influence? Or are you happy with the amount? Or is it that you simply know, because I'm going to tell you now, that you do have a huge impact, though people like me don't write to you all the time saying, Steve, yes, that was a good point, et cetera, et cetera. So what's your experience?
Oh, I give you two answers, Rodney. Right. In general, I get a modest number of responses, and the overwhelming majority of them are positive. You get negative ones. Everybody gets negative ones. But the over 90% are positive. And what really astounded me, Rodney, was that when I wrote my article Back from the Abyss a week ago Wednesday and got it out the same day, I knew exactly what I wanted to write about. I had so much time to think about it during my rehabilitation. But I wrote that article, and I got it out that day. I began getting literally a tsunami of welcome back, get well good wishes that to this day keep on coming. Just scores and scores and scores of responses from people who follow what I do and welcome me back. It literally made me cry to get all of these things. That people cared. People wondered what happened to me, and they were concerned that I wasn't around. They wanted to hear what I had to say. They wanted to follow my opinions and know what they were, and they were so happy that now I'm back and I can write again and they can follow me again. That lifted me so much. This is therapy. Therapy
okay
for the soul and for the body, Rodney.
Right. So it's back to the work, and the work we have to look at is evil. And wherever we look at in the world at the moment, and I'm sorry to say that, that it is evil, and evil which is being created by the USA. I mean, where do I start? Syria, Gaza, Iraq, Ukraine, what they're up to in Yemen or Pakistan. I mean, where do I start? I will pick, if I may, if that's okay with you, I'll pick Ukraine. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely. And of course, you were, to say the least, a valued contributor, as was Paul Craig Roberts, to the book that I edited and contributed a little bit to myself, Flashpoint in Ukraine, How the U.S. Drive for Hegemony Risks World War III. And I would tell you, Rodney, I just learned this after I came back, that the book has been published in France, and there's a good chance it can be published in China as well.
Ah, good.
Which is wonderful news.
This is rather, since the book was published, the subject got even more important. There was an agreement in the early 90s that NATO would not expand eastward. And then in no time at all, all the East European states, for starters, were joining NATO, and NATO was coming up against the borders of Russia, and they've continued to do that. And the real truth about Ukraine, it is an attempted expansion of NATO right up against Russia's borders. Now, that's the background. But I think your viewers ought to know something, which is being shut down on the media. It's absolutely terrible. And it is this. A plane gets shot down over Ukraine, the MH17 airliner, and immediately up jumps Obama and Kerry and Cameron and Haig in this country, saying, oh, yes, this is due to Russia. You may remember that just a year ago, there was a poison gas attack in Syria. Up jumped Obama, Kerry, Cameron and Haig, saying, oh, yes, we know who it was. It was Assad. And we now know that it wasn't. And we've got exactly the same situation now in Ukraine.
And this has a name, Roddy. It's called a false flag.
It is called a false flag. But look at the scale of this one. Well, I don't know. And we've got 9/11, which we won't deal with now. Well, that was a false flag. But look at this one. It has become clear that plane was first of all directed over that part of Ukraine, and involved in that was an aircraft controller called Carlos, who has been disappeared. And so the instructions and what was going on in the aircraft and why the aircraft was directed to that is not known at the moment. And one of the key people concerned has been removed. Secondly, why was the altitude lowered? And that part and the instructions have not been revealed. Thirdly, Russia has revealed its radar evidence, but if the Americans and Ukraine had any evidence at all, which incriminated Russia, by God, they would have been putting it out so far. But now we come to the crux of the matter. Certain images have been removed from the internet, but there are still sufficient number of those images so that you can see parts of the plane. And one of those parts of the plane is the cockpit. And that cockpit has been riddled with bullet holes.
Yes.
And they seem to be two sorts. Basically, they are the sort of blast you get from a tank-busting machine gun type thing. The sort of thing which the Su-25s, which were up there. What were they doing up there next to that plane? But both, no doubt that there was an attack by some plane. It can only have been the Su-25s of the Ukrainian Air Force. They may have also used a missile, but you can't get away from the fact that that cockpit has been riddled with bullet holes, and it seems to have been an attack from both sides. So they come in at one side, make a pass over the plane, and probably the other plane comes as well, and that they may well have finished it off with a missile. Now, see, on top of that, there are the black boxes, and you notice that not a word has come out about the black boxes. So I'm going to tell your listeners this. There's no doubt that that plane was shot down by the Ukrainian Air Force, and its purpose, of course, they were hoping to catch Putin, who is believed to have been going through the area in a very, very similar-looking plane. They shoot it down. And then, of course, they then use the power of the Western media to put the blame on Russia. But the evidence is there. Oh, it's not there to blame Russia. The evidence is such that it was, in fact, the Ukraine. And I prophesy this, is that nothing will happen. Nothing will happen until at such time as people are forgetting about it. Then, in fact, the truth will come out.
Oh,
because,
indeed.
You see, America and the United Kingdom have so committed themselves to a lie, they simply cannot afford now to have the truth come out. Exactly the same as 9/11. Could they have the truth come out that there was a conspiracy which resulted in the murder of 3,000 Americans and the murder of subsequent millions as they went on their war against terror? No, they're into it right up to their eyeballs. And so they must maintain the lie. And that looks to me, I'm afraid, Steve, is exactly what is happening over MH17, the airliner which was downed. They could have had the truth out by now if they'd released the black boxes and if they'd released the radar evidence, which the United States is certain to have happened, because the Ukraine situation has been going on for a long time now, and they would have satellites over the area and they would know exactly what was going on with that plane. But they're not releasing their evidence because they tried to stitch up Russia, and I'm afraid it's the opposite. It's the guilty one is the Kiev government and the United States right in there. Senator John McCain are all of them incriminated in another false flag attack.
Absolutely, Rodney. The plane was shot down from the air, certainly machine gunned down, maybe a missile, an air-to-air missile was used, who knows, but it had nothing to do with Russia, had nothing to do with the fighters on the ground, the resistance. I call the freedom-fighting Democrats, and the major media in America, Western media, American media I follow the most, but Western media, from the New York Times to Fox News, proliferates the big lie, and they know the right information, and they could report it if they wanted to, but they don't, and the big lie just regurgitates over and over again. And again, another classic false flag. And the most obvious question to me, Rodney, goes unanswered. Key Bono, what on earth would Russia or the freedom-fighting Democrats have to gain from shooting down a commercial airliner? What could they possibly gain by that? And the answer is absolutely nothing. And the counterpoint to that question is, what would Ukraine and Washington have to gain from shooting down the plane? And the answer is plenty. They can blame it on Russia and the freedom-fighting Democrats, and that's exactly what happened.
Yes. Well, that question, cui bono, to who benefits by this action, which, of course, is the first question asked by any detective investigating any particular case. And Russia had absolutely nothing to gain by this action. And the same with Syria, with that poison gas attack, that sarin gas attack. It had nothing to gain. The only ones who would gain would be America, the USA, and the Saudis, all of whom wanted to have war against the Assad government. Now, that question, cui bono, well, let us raise it again, if I may change to the extraordinary situation in Gaza. You see, Steve, in the year before this latest merciless onslaught, this deliberate extermination of the people of Gaza, there were no Israelis who were killed, with the exception of three. And the three were young men who were captured, horribly tortured, and would have died under their torture. Cui bono. The consequence was that an already ready military machine wanting to continue its policy of making life so hell for the Palestinians that one way or another they get out, continuing its policy of not wanting to negotiate at all. I mean, they were going into negotiations or discussions at the same time as they were increasing their settlements, in other words, acting in pure bad faith. The Zionist entity continuing its overall policy was the only group which had anything to gain by the control, by the torture and killing of those three young men. Everybody else, the Gazans, for example, would only get what they got, which would be the blasting apart. The figure is 2,000 as we speak, and it's 10,000. And a point about the who are wounded, and a point about the wounded, Steve, is that the dime bomb, they've been putting phosphorus on the civilians, and as you know, that the phosphorus doesn't go out. So if a bit of drop lands on you, it just burns straight the way through you, and there's not much you can do to stop it burning way through you. But the dime bomb is a nasty thing. It comes on the ground, and then it puts us out of sort of like a sort of horizontal slicer. And that is why you've got these horrific injuries, cutting off the lower part of the body. It's 400 children, something well over half are the children and women. And there was in six United Nations schools. The United Nations gave the geographical coordinates to the Israelis. And having been given the geographical coordinates, what happens? The Israelis then shell those schools with hundreds of people in them and include the United Nations officers. I'd like to make a comment on the United Nations officers. About 2 weeks ago, there was a creepy, crawly speech, absolutely sickening stuff, from Ban Ki-moon, who was, I think he was visiting Israel and saying how poor old Israel had been attacked and it had to defend itself and therefore it was in the right. And the next thing that happens, we know, is that Israel, now being given by Ban Ki-moon, who a creepy crawler, obviously there was going to be no opposition, they then, of course, attack the United Nations schools. Now, I don't want to even say, it would be childish of me to say, we'll serve you right, Ban Ki-moon, because this is such a serious matter. But look at the situation where the United Nations, effectively controlled by the USA and therefore controlled by Zionism, embarks upon the obliteration. You look at Gaza. The only comparable pictures are that, I think I would say, of the destruction of Dresden in revenge for the Nazis blasting out Coventry and Birmingham, particularly Coventry in the United Kingdom. We went and we blasted Dresden, and simply, I mean, it was just a slaughter and a smashing of the whole place. And that is what Israel has done to Gaza, all because they were able to get away with that false flag account that it had been Hamas which had attacked. They then talk about these tunnels by which these people were attacked. The tunnels are between Egypt and Gaza, and they've tried to invent this story of aggression tunnels by which the people in Gaza can get into Israel and then kidnap these young men. I don't think there's any evidence of that at all. It had to have been a false flag attack. And now what you've got in Gaza, the water's been poisoned. You've had deliberate attacks on children. For example, the ship, which shot four young boys, 6 and 7 year olds, playing football on the beach. You've got an Israeli sniper who brags of killing, well, there have been two accounts, 13 or 16 young people in one day. That's it. And then on top of that, you've got Netanyahu actually saying he had and has a moral duty. I say that again. Israel has a moral duty to shell those United Nations schools. Now, what moral duty? Well, there have been Israeli people saying we must destroy all Palestinians, particularly the women and children, because, as you know, women and children are essentially the way by which a population maintains itself and replicates itself. But you're looking at statements like the Nazis. And Netanyahu has stated that Israel has a moral duty to attack those United Nations schools. And so what are you looking at? You're looking at something which is completely out of control. And, of course, it can do what it's like. It can treat the United Nations with contempt, because the bottom line is, and here is the source of this evil, I'm sorry to say, though it is abetted by my own government, the source of this evil ultimately is the USA, because the USA could do something about it. And, Steve, I'm going to say one more thing. There should be sanctions on Israel, and there should be sanctions on the USA. And if you think that that is stupid and a joke, I wish to point out something, that the sanctions on the USA have already started. They started in a very rough and ready way by the Russian response to the sanctions being put on that. But now the sanctions are that Russia is starting to ban agricultural things, cheese from the UK, fruit from Spain, and I think stuff from the USA. But once you've started that, the sort of the mental breakthrough is there, that the USA can have sanctions put on it, and the more it puts sanctions on other people, they, for a start, are saying, well, we're not going to deal with the West. It's too bloody risky, and they're bully and they're arrogant. The more the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South America, and about another 120 countries are all going to cooperate with each other. And the more the way things are moving, Steve, it's not going to only be sanctions on Israel. It is, I prophesy here, it's going to be sanctions on the USA until the USA wakes up that it is the monster which is behind the outrageous genocidal behavior of Israel.
There's no question about that, Rodney. America funds the Israeli killing machine, billions of dollars in aid annually, munitions, weapons on demand, funding Israel's phony Iron Dome. By the way, I have an article written I haven't gotten out yet, because I wrote a couple of others that were more time sensitive, but I'll just bring it up now since I mentioned it. The notion that Israel's Iron Dome is taking down the Hamas rockets is another one of those big lies. The Iron Dome is an absolutely fake system. It fails at least 95% of the time. It simply doesn't work. And I have an article explaining it in detail by the man who may be the world's expert on this sort of an issue. And I remember this is Theodore Postol, the MIT physicist. And I remember years ago he made a statement of saying it is almost an impossibility for a bullet to hit a bullet. And he explained in detail why the Iron Dome is a fraud and a fake. And it fails. And once in a while, it gets lucky and it hits something. But all of these other issues, so important, Rodney, the fact that America is funding Israel's killing machine, America, if it was a noble, moral country, could literally stop the horrors going on in Palestine by cutting off Israel entirely, leading the Western world against the rogue Israeli state. And I guarantee you, in days or in weeks at the most, that the horrors going on in Palestine would come to an end. But, of course, this doesn't serve U.S. interests. The opposite serves U.S. interests.
Yes. But a word here on the word rocket. The rockets, you would think there'd be something like the V1 or the V2, the Nazis. But the actual so-called rockets of Gaza haven't been really killing anybody, not before this onslaught went on. And it's only, I think, a few, two or three civilians, just even now. They're not rockets. They're, at best, they're fireworks. And the Iron Dome doesn't, in fact, have an effect on them. Steve, I'd like to query this, if I may say so, this use of the word rocket, because it's all part of a cunning trick, which is to say that there are two sides at war, and they're all evenly balanced. You see, the Israel has tanks and aeroplanes and missiles and H-bombs and things, and the other side has rockets, implication that it's an equal fight. It's nothing of the sort. You get it all the time. You get reasonable people talking, say, oh, both sides must stop. It isn't both sides. If one side is virtually powerless and is surrounded and is being strangled, and you know, if I put my hands around your throat, you have no alternative but to try and kick me in the balls. And if I then say to you, well, now please give in, and you give in, then immediately I can succeed in strangling you, can't I? And that is the position. It is so totally and absolutely one side. And it's disgraceful that the world's media and the BBC, they try to portray this as an even, they called it a battle. And in the battle, of course, you have two sides implicitly, very roughly having a go at each other on roughly even terms. It's nothing of this sort. A deliberate extermination, a deliberate destruction, and the USA is completely behind it. And Steve, you said financing, yes, and providing the arms, but in particular, providing the one thing which matters, the veto in the Security Council.
Indeed.
And that veto, which prevents, as I understand it, from anybody being able to get Israel up before the International Criminal Court. Mind you, we're working on it. And there may well be issues once the Palestinians organize themselves a bit more in respect of their international identity. And so they may, and I believe it's possible that Netanyahu is getting a bit worried on that score. But at the moment, I think it's reasonable to say that he is in his slaughtering, exactly the same as what happened in the Warsaw Ghetto to the Jews when the Nazis did it. He's now doing this to the Gazans. And you look at their language. It is the same sort of sub. The Gazans and the Arabs are subhumans, and therefore we can do anything we like. And once you admit that another human being is less than you, then I'm afraid it's a slippery slope and you end up killing them.
Absolutely, Ronnie. It's been a while, but I've written about the horrors of the Warsaw Ghetto. And, of course, there were other ghettos, the smaller ones than the Warsaw one. But that's exactly what Israel is doing to the Palestinians. I mean, treating them like vermin to be exterminated, starve them to death, kill them, slaughter them, do anything you want to them. And the world just yawns and does nothing about it. And that's exactly what's going on. And I would say whatever comes out of Cairo, whether anything, I imagine something will come out of it. And maybe the fighting for now will stop. But there is no question in my mind, I would say there is 100% certainty that the Palestinians will come out of this getting absolutely nothing that they want, and there'll be another Israeli onslaught. Whenever Israel decides it wants to initiate it, it could be in a month, it could be in a year, it could be in a few years. But we had Operation Cast Lead, December 2008 and 9, November 2012, we had Operation Pillar of Cloud. Now we have Operation Protective Edge. There'll be another Israeli onslaught. The same thing all over and over again, and nothing is done to help the isolated Palestinians. They're on their own, and the idea that Egypt, militantly anti-Palestinian, is a legitimate mediator between the two sides is outrageous. And why the Palestinians agree to let Egypt get involved in this, I don't know. And Washington is always lurking in the background.
Yes, indeed. See, that's all quite right. We can't be hopeful at the moment. The only hopeful thing is, and returning to what we started this broadcast today, that the influence of the alternative media has greatly increased as a result of the atrocities being committed at this moment in Gaza. And by the way, you're getting now a build-up to a similar situation in eastern Ukraine. And that's not being repeated on, of course, being reported on the Western media. But I think the word is getting out. And so though we don't win at the moment in respect of Gaza, I think that the movements, the anti-Israel movement, and what will turn into the anti-American movement, are definitely on the increase. Now, Steve, you mentioned the financing of Israel. And of course, there was the arms, and then there's the political protection, which the USA gives. And on top of that, there's the spying. And oh dear, I do think America ought to wake up that the spying, which means all the information ends up in the hands of Israel. And just a quickie, before I go on to ISIL and the Islamic State, a quickie here. It is being sort of speculated upon something that Edward Snowden said, that there's more to come from his revelations. And the question is, what on earth can that be, given that he's told the world that everybody is being spied on in every way? Well, I think I'm going to go for it, Steve. And I think there is still one more revelation to come. And it does connect it with spying. And it is this, that the way the Western intelligence services, and this is particularly true of MI5 and MI6 and the American intelligence services, is their great dream is always to get an individual to make a mistake or to spot him having made a mistake and then to quietly ingratiate themselves with that person and ideally encourage them to make more of a mistake. So this may be some sort of, say, sexual proclivity or having a few snorts of cocaine, whatever they get up to. And then once they've made this mistake, that person can be promoted and is promoted, ideally right the way through to the top of the political structure. And when they're at the political structure, of course, you've got these skeletons in the cupboard, and they can always have a little chat, and they can agree to do this or to agree to do that, as long as they don't overplay the hand. In that way, they can, in fact, control and manipulate the whole of the political system. And I think that that is what Edward Snowden is still going to be able to reveal when he actually goes through these documents, and he hasn't got through them yet. When he goes through them, and they will find that top people in America, and probably and you can name them now, whoever think of the top in America, is suddenly going to be revealed that those are the ones who have not just been spied on but have been blackmailed and are being controlled. And that seems to me the last of the possible revelations that could come from Edward Snowden, because he's done everything else, hasn't he? What do you think about that?
Oh, well, I'm delighted every time something comes up, and I've been away from it. I wrote so much about what he did and all the revelations that came out over time, and what you're discussing now would be wonderful, and if something along these lines comes out, it absolutely will be material for another article for me to write to get back on the NSA horrors. But,
yes.
You've got this, and you've got so much else going on. I mean, where does it stop, Rodney? The crimes that America commits, literally crimes of war against humanity, the worst type crimes imaginable, and spying is only one, but this is America that outrageously calls itself a democracy.
See, I know we're at the level of spying on Angela Merkel, the German chancellor. That's spying. But what is to come is the blackmailing and control. In other words, that the secret services are totally out of control. And they're controlled by the Zionist elements. Now, if that one comes out, then there'll be a question of what you do about it. But the outrage when you find that people who you thought are wrong, but at least reasonably honorable, are in fact completely being corrupted and controlled by sinister people behind the scenes. Now, Steve, if I can just turn now to your remark about financing of Israel, and I want to talk about the financing of ISIL, that's the Islamic State in Syria, we've kept the Islamic State in Levant, which we now call Daesh, or you can call it the Islamic State.
Yes.
Who's been financing and arming and promoting them, and what is the situation now? Well, you're back to the USA for starters. It depends how far you want to go back in this particular story, but certainly in the last year or the 18 months, it was the financing and the arming of these groups, starting with Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria. And then they financed these other groups who then took over and fought Jabhat al-Nusra. And effectively, these extreme violence groups now have taken over and become independent so that they're capable of getting their own finance, for example, by robbing all the banks in Mosul. And now they are able to tax parts of Iraq, and so they have a self-sustaining situation. And that yet the USA, which having created the thing, then finds itself in the position of saying, well, now they've created the thing. By the way, the purpose is, of course, what the Zionist purpose is, to smash up any independent, strong independent Middle East state. They've done that okay. The only trouble is, from the point of view of the USA now, is this monster which they deliberately created by the axis of evil. Let's name them: the USA and its sidekick, the UK, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. They created the thing, but there is a bit of a problem now, is that that thing may be out of control. And I'll take one aspect of that, may I, which is Turkey. Turkey is the other one, which in particular has been behind this. Erdogan came into government and with the promise that friends to everybody would be his foreign policy. He then gets, frankly, either he's been blackmailed or he's had a few million, even tens of millions, put into his bank account, because he then totally changes round the policy of Turkey and goes in to backing with these monsters. These same monsters who are eventually going to destroy Turkey itself. Now, how do you explain all that? The answer is Erdogan must have been bribed or blackmailed. It's the only explanation why Turkey came to reverse its major policy, which was not to get involved. A lot of people in Turkey are furious about that now, but look at what's happening. You've got ISIS or Daesh wanting now to destroy the Kurds, America being forced to support the Kurds, the consequences within the Kurds of Turkey, well, I think will be to force the independence movements for the Kurds of Turkey. Israel and America, for their own reasons, are supporting Kurdistan and having to support it even more, thus supporting the independence movements for Turkey. The USA and Israel are pleased that they've smashed up Iraq. They've cut back the forces of Shia Islam back to, shall we say, a third, or perhaps a little bit more than that, of the country in the south and center. And they're very pleased with their work. The only trouble is Daesh may suddenly whip across into Saudi Arabia, which has the greatest potential for being overthrown by Daesh. And yet, because you see, it was Saudi Arabia and its monstrous Wahhabi philosophy, which is Takfiri, Salafist. What it says is that they can kill absolutely anybody. It's not Christians. It's not even Shia. It's not Shia Muslim. It's anybody, even Sunnis, who can be massacred if these people wish to do it. So the monster's been created. America's done it with Israel and Saudi Arabia and Turkey. Qatar's, of course, put in their money as well. And this monster is now out of control. The Americans would be pleased to have it doing some of its work, but the problem is it is so out of control, it will now be in danger, from the American point of view, of smashing Saudi Arabia and Jordan, and eventually it will turn on Israel.
Israel should be very vulnerable in a part of the world that is certainly all other countries are Arab countries. Iran is Persian, but it has a large Arab population too, mostly Persians, but Arabs as well. And Israel is sitting there, and exactly what its relations are with all these countries, I don't know. Officially, it doesn't have relations with most of the countries in the region, but of course they have their back channels where they have certain relations. And even the Saudis, which should be completely anti-Israeli, its intelligence chief, Prince Banda, some months ago made a secret trip to Israel. It's shocking that something like that would happen, lining up with Israel against something that Israel is against. And this kind of stuff goes on. But you would think that Israel would be very vulnerable, and with groups like ISIS or ISIL and al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, other extremist groups. I mean, Arabs fighting Arabs, you would think that they would want to take on a Jewish state that is killing Arabs. that is killing Arabs. I think eventually they're going to get around to that, Rodney, and Israel will turn out to be very, very vulnerable. You could just imagine these kind of people crossing Israel's border. I mean, they can get through if they want to. Israel can kill a lot of them, but they seem to come in endless numbers, just like cockroaches. I mean, no matter how many you kill, there are many more there that are ready to come in and take their place. And I think eventually Israel could find itself in an awful lot of trouble. But this stuff goes on. And a key point about ISIL or ISIS is that this group and others like it is America's ally. Well, they are America's allies in countries like Syria, but they're America's enemies in countries like Iraq. And the same thing is going on at the same time. So we're funding them. We're giving them weapons in one place and another place. They're the enemy. We're fighting them. And Obama bombing these people, air campaigns only have limited effects. I mean, to really have a campaign against a heavily armed fighting group with lots of troops involved, controlling a good part of the country, an air campaign isn't going to get rid of them. So you've got a small number of U.S. forces in, Marines, Special Forces. This is a classic campaign that could turn out to be mission creep, Rodney. Dare I say, are we going to have another Gulf War or Bush War in 2003? Is that what this is going to come to? It certainly is possible. I'm not predicting it, but it certainly is possible. And I would say, most of all, the Iraqis deserve something much better than this. Most Iraqis living today have known nothing but wars since the 1980s during the Reagan era in Washington. They've never known peace of any kind. And even during the sanctions years between the Gulf War and Bush's 2003 war, that was a war of another time, of another kind. And Bill Clinton intermittently bombed Iraq at that time. They had their no-fly zones, and there were intermittent bombings, and the horrors that went on for the Iraqi people, who have known no peace, no stability, nothing. And this continues again under Obama. Will it ever end, Rodney? Will it ever end?
Well, I just want to make one more point on this thing, which is the arrogance and the hubris of the USA and of Saudi Arabia, who basically think that they can create something and push and destroy. But the connection which explains all of it is actually the desire of Israel to smash all the states. And you said that the Saudis are opposed to Israel. They are in rhetoric, but in actual reality, the deal is between Israel and America and the United Kingdom to support the regime in Saudi Arabia. And we're the UK here. We're thorough supporters of Saudi Arabia. You know, the head choppers and the whippies of the women, the sexual perverts in Saudi Arabia. Do you know that a man who had a blogging site has been sentenced to 1,000 lashes? Now, Steve, the situation with lashes is around about 50, you die. So what they do, they give you 50, put you into hospital, and then pull you out again. In other words, they bring him near to death 20 times. That's his penalty. I mean, the USA, when it does waterboarding, right, that's taking someone just to the verge of death. In the case of one man, they manage to do it 3 times a day. Well, the Saudis do the same sort of trick. Now, the Saudis are scumbags. And their game, of course, is to pretend to be against Israel, but in practice to support it. And this is the same with the USA. They say what they like. They end up supporting it. Why do the Saudis support? Because the deal is to support the Saudi regime to suppress its own population. And that is what it's really about. The USA, of course, and the UK, they've no intention of supporting a democracy. And by the way, they've no intention of supporting the Christians, have they? Who's been murdered in Iraq? It's the Christians. And it's been the Azadi Iraqis who are Sunni. And it's been any group. But do you have a word really coming from the Christian Zionists in America about what's happening? No, because the Christian Zionists in the USA, 50 to 70 million of them, are controlled by Israel, and they don't care a damn about their fellow Christians in the Middle East. Somebody asked me the other day, who are the oldest Christians in the Middle East? I said, Syria, of course, and they've been slaughtered by the American government. Steve, it's so sickening. The USA has got no morality. It's not even supporting Christians. But anyway, let us leave that, and let's quickly shift across to the specific, Steve, because I'm afraid another game is going on there. America has, as it said, pivoted to the Pacific. But what that means is, in its term, to contain China, i.e. pushing right against China, and they're trying to create, I think they're trying to create war in the Pacific. Shocking though to say, so you've got war against Russia, if they can pull that one off, war against China, backing Israel in its massacre, and you are seeing the extent, I mean, the massacre of the Christians in the Middle East, about which the USA is doing nothing, because you see, it is actually behind these groups. So much for the USA, the scumbag American government. When are the people, the American public now, your police are not police, they are just licensed killers with guns. And your police have got tanks to aim at their own population. You don't actually have a civil state anymore. You've got a militarized one. And your government has got 2 billion, not million, billion dum-dum bullets, 7 for every American citizen, to explode, to shoot. Your government has taken the authority to shoot any single American citizen. And it's got the spying capacity to identify them. That's number one. Number two, to shut down their money supply. That's to say, shut down their bank accounts. Number three, to put the geostationary geographical coordinates on them. And number four, to turn up with a SWAT gang and destroy them. That is what has happened to the USA. And why? All ultimately in the name of supporting this Zionist globalism, which is going on, thinks it can do what it likes and can beat anybody up, and has got no morality and never even supports the Christians of the Middle East. It's disgraceful, Steve, but there you are. What can we do about it? We can talk and we can stimulate opposition, and I hope that someone like, is it Bernie Sanders, might stand for your next president if they don't assassinate him. And maybe American politics will change. But at the moment, one of the most depressing things in the overall scene is the American political one. In Europe, there are great powerful forces. They've got negative elements. But believe you me, they are and will give great shocks to the political structure. And so something is capable of coming out of it as Europe decides to make its own way in the world and not be beholden to those Americans.
It's not true in America, Rodney. The political situation here is absolutely, it's beyond repair. The only way to have change in America is for people simply to walk away from the duopoly power, the Republicans and the Democrats, really a one-party system with two wings. Simply walk away with them. Before the November 2012 election, I wrote an article I titled Vote Independent or Stay Home. I haven't voted Republican or Democrat in as far back as I can remember, and I think it's absolutely insane to vote for either party and to say, well, you know, the parties are really awful, but my local candidate here, the guy who represents me in the House of Representatives, or maybe my senator, he or she is different. Well, he or she is not different. Basically, they're all corrupt. They're all in the tank. They're all part of the same dirty system. And even Bernie Sanders talks the talk, but sometimes doesn't walk the walk. And he was the only senator who introduced a bill for universal health care in America when Obamacare was being debated. But when it came time to vote, he voted for Obamacare, the kind of abomination that he was against rhetorically, but his vote went for the program that he said so many bad things about. So the pressure gets on these people, and they go along with the system. And if a Bernie Sanders was elected president, he would fall or she would fall on his or her sword and go along with the system. The lesson of Jack Kennedy was never forgotten.
Well, that's very, very, very depressing. A quick word on the American system. There's no doubt that you have the health technology, but there are just two aspects. The first point is that it costs twice as much as anybody else's does. Your health cost system costs twice. It's twice what it costs in the UK. You're upon 18 or 19% of GDP, and we're about 9 in the UK. But the other thing is this brag that in America that you've got a health system which in practice works. This isn't true. As regards longevity, the American health system is about 40th or 44th in the world. You would think, given all the money that's spent on and all the boasting and the bragging, that the USA would have the healthiest population. No. And he's beaten by the French and by the United Kingdom. The French spend about 10 or 11% on, but they beat us, they beat the UK, and we beat the USA when it comes to longevity. And this is an extraordinary thing, because the reality of the American health system is that it is a stitch-up for companies to rip off money. It's basically, it's a great drag on society and everybody else. The cheapest solution, and one which would improve your actual health rates, would indeed be a universal health system. Something on, we're not saying we're perfect in the UK, we're not, but something on those lines would be much cheaper and likely to be much more efficient.
Oh, absolutely, Rodney. The idea is to get the insurance companies out of the system that don't provide any health care at all. Yet
that's
they rip
right.
off the system for $400 or $500 billion annually, and the fees they charge for insurance people are forced to buy. And in America now, people are forced to buy insurance even if they don't want to. They'll get penalized tax-wise if they don't do it. But the bills are absolutely horrendous. I spent a couple of weeks in the hospital before rehab, and the bills are still coming in. And I think I haven't added them all up, but I think they're all the order of $50,000 and rising. And he said, what on earth did they give me for that? They gave me one problem after another. I discovered firsthand what I always knew, that hospitals are infection factories, and I certainly was one of its victims. And all this is covered by Medicare. As much as I dislike Lyndon Johnson, the one thing I'm very grateful to him for is that he got Medicare passed. He had the power to get the Congress to pass it, even against the Republicans. Democrats controlled the system then. And he got it passed. And if it wasn't for Medicare, what would people like me and many others do if they had a serious illness or they spent so many days in the hospital? How on earth could people ever pay bills like this? Some time ago, Rodney, several years ago, and I know I could find the article, I wrote an article about the cost of health care going back 4 or 5 decades. I think I might have focused on the 1960s. And the cost was minuscule compared to what it is today. I mean, just minuscule. You could get a day of hospital care might be something like 10 or 15% of what it costs today. And today it's absolutely outrageous, the cost, plus all the other fees, the lab fees and the doctor fees and so on. But you spend enough time in the hospital, most people in this country cannot afford that if they don't have insurance. And even then, you've got deductibles, you've got co-pays, you've got this, you've got that. Thank heavens for Medicare, which is getting worse. But if it weren't for Medicare, I don't know what I would do, Ronnie. I'd probably have to leave the country and just welch on my debts and find refuge someplace, because I wouldn't have the money to pay these kind of bills.
Well, I do hope that your audience, your listeners, take on board that America is not at the top in terms of efficiently serving its population. American Health Service is not. And the cost is twice as much. And it's basically, you've got a sort of parasite class which the health system supports. And so all this propaganda about socialism and all the rest of it, a lot of old hooey. And it's time that America woke up to it. The other fact that the Americans ought to take on board is that the American middle class, which was once one of the miracles of the world in the years after the Second World War, is the great expansion of the American middle class. That middle class has gone. There's been, in real terms, the real incomes of the American middle class has been going backwards for now, it's about 27 years. And the jobs which have been exported not coming back. So I'm just saying to the USA people, look, you've actually got a lot of support around the world if you start to show some sense. People want to be friends with the USA, but you've now destroyed your middle class. Your health service is, alas, is a nasty joke. You are killing everywhere around the world. And you support a system which is probably behind all the destruction as well. And so I'm afraid that people like me, we're laughing now. I'm afraid we're laughing at the American politicians. What do you say when, on the one hand, they are putting out billions of pounds and lots of all the armaments and things for the Salafists and the Wahhabists and the rest of it, and on the other hand, they're having to bomb them at the same time. I mean, this, the word isn't bankruptcy or contradiction. It's just the sort of mad sort of joke that you would expect from an empire which at some stage is going to suddenly collapse. And it will collapse when the world starts laughing at it. And though the laugh is a bitter laugh, and I am laughing bitterly, I have to say now that respect for the USA, forget it. There's still fear, goodness me, yes. And there's still acknowledgement that everything we do is spied on. And the Americans have a remarkable military capacity. But believe you me, right the way around, when you talk to people now, the jokes are coming. There's still fear, because they fear the American military response, but the jokes are coming. And when they do, it will all collapse. And a similar sort of thing happened with the Soviet Union just prior to its collapse. The jokes started becoming thick and fast. And after that, that was the end. And there is this question of Dmitry Orlov, who has compared the collapse of the USA coming with what actually happened. And believe you me, on all the factors and indicators, including the jokes, the situation in respect of the USA is worse than what was that of the Soviet Union just prior to its collapse. So this is sad stuff. And I would say to you, a welcome back, Steve. You and Paul Craig Roberts are the two top commentators and analysts. And say to your listeners, go for it. We haven't won all. It's an evil world, but we're doing pretty well, and we're going to go on fighting.
Well, Rodney, you are superb, yes, and I thank you so much for your kind comments. It's wonderful being back. It's wonderful being able to comment again. It's wonderful being on this program and discussing the major issues that we can spend so much time on in an hour and give listeners some real context on what really is going on and get away from the garbage they get when they turn their television set on and they get nonstop CNN or Fox or whatever and get nothing but lies proliferating. And I agree with you that America's day of reckoning is coming. Israel's day of reckoning is coming. Every empire in history has collapsed. Israel isn't an empire. It's a Middle East power, but it's not an empire. But America is an empire. And just like all the others that preceded it, its day will come. It will collapse. I'm getting up in years, Rodney. I just hope I live long enough to see it happen. It literally cannot happen a moment too soon. Maybe it's humanity's only chance to survive. Get rid of this horrendous empire that's causing so much grief to so many people around the world, destroying one country after another, ravaging one country after another, the way I like to put it. And heaven help us if a way isn't found to stop this juggernaut from literally taking on humanity and risking annihilating it altogether. Rodney, I look forward to having you back again, to doing this again. I'm getting caught up on the guests that I wanted to have on, including some I had scheduled that I couldn't have on, and because I was in the hospital offline with no email addresses, no computer access, I couldn't tell people that I couldn't have you on my program because there won't be a program that I will be hosting. And I had to wait until I came back home again to begin sending out emails belatedly to explain to people why program they were scheduled to be on didn't happen and why I wasn't around for so long. But I hope that's the end of it. And
very quick, don't worry, and don't forget, your secret of your youth is your fight for justice, okay? Yeah. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Rodney, so much. I am committed for that. And in this time of my life, my latter years, I'm really committed to give back. I didn't become rich and famous and so on, but I felt that I had a decent life. And this is give back time for me, to be able to do something as an unpaid volunteer and to be able to spread important information to people on the major world and national issues and hope that they will spread it to other people. I got to wrap it up.
Yes.
Okay. We'll be back. I'll be back Sunday, live. Tune in, Progressive Radio News Hour. Major issues. We'll do it every week several times.